Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Kung Fu, one of the most groundbreaking television programs of the 1970s, gets a contemporary fresh adaptation on the CW beginning Wednesday night. Executive producer and showrunner Christina Kim joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. A decade later, America's Most Wanted established a hyper-documentary scripted real-time interactive benchmark for the two. Fox's latest run of AMW, hosted by Elizabeth Vargas, continues tonight. We'll check in with showrunner John Farrakhan later this hour. Also ahead, Guy Fieri's new Food Network meal, Taking the Rolls Out twist, SAG TV results, and our new classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and Tuner Radio. I present on Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Whether you celebrated Easter or the end of Passover yesterday, we hope you had a great, great day, and we are delighted to have you with us today for the program about TV's current and future. Beautiful day here in the Big Apple, 65 degrees at the top of the hour. We have a great power hour and change for you today, and we invite you to be in the program and interactive with our guests. How do you do it? You pick up the phone, you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, Tuner Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, that's no problem with us. We got a chat room ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker or tune-in screen. Follow the instructions of other people live with you. Christina Kim from Kung Fu, live with us from Los Angeles, after these news notes. You can look forward to 3 more years of Guy Fieri rolling out new Food Network programming. Under this new contract extension, Fieri is expected to produce and host more episodes of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Guy's Grocery Games, and Tournament of Champions, the latter now in its second season. He's also expected to develop original material for Mega Unscripted Service Discovery Plus through his new production venture, Knuckle Sandwich. There's a new multicast network launching today, Style Series, the main attraction, and Facia Group Tegna, the distributor. Some of the notable series, all off cable, include Top Chef, Flipping Out, and Clean House. Twist will be available in 43 of the top 50 markets, led by New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Philadelphia. A pair of television series captured pairs of Screen Actors Guild Awards last night. The event was simulcast in a special one-hour taped form on TBS and TNT. The Crown, earned trophies for Best Ensemble Cast and Female Actor Gillian Anderson. Bleak's Creek, we can't see the first name whilst we're off the air, also won Ensemble Award for Comedy Television and Female Actress Catherine O'Hara. Other TV winners were Jason Zekas for Ted Lasso, comedy male actor, Jason Bateman from Ozark, that's for drama male actor, the Queen's Gambit star Anya Taylor-Joy, movie and miniseries actress, Mark Ruffalo from I Know This Much Is True, movie and miniseries actor, and The Mandalorian for Stunt Ensemble on television. Now some quickies before our first guest. AMC's final season of The Walking Dead will begin August 22nd. Efforts to find a new home for The Right Stuff, canceled by Disney Plus late last Friday, are underway. TNT and HBO Max are among the possibilities under review. Panic will be Amazon's big original series premiere on Memorial Day weekend. And writers on ABC's primetime game show, The Chase, have reached a new agreement with ITV Studios and the Writers Guild of America, ending a 2-week strike. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, the executive producer, showrunner, and first episode writer of the new version of Kung Fu coming to the CW Wednesday night, Christina Kim. Christina, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
What's it like to take an iconic series like Kung Fu that was groundbreaking in so many ways in the 1970s, modernize it for TV starting on the CW Wednesday night?
It was really an exciting opportunity for me. I know that Kung Fu is a beloved series, and it was really groundbreaking at the time. So there was a lot from the old show that I wanted to bring forth, but obviously modernize. So it was a really exciting project. You know, the idea of bringing Buddhist wisdom, spirituality, and Kung Fu to a TV audience was groundbreaking at the time. And the idea of someone using those skills to help people in need was an idea that I thought was really worth preserving and really translated well to our series. So those were some of the things that I was excited to bring forward. And, of course, more than anything, I'm so excited to have you know, the first Asian-led network TV drama, Asian cast-led, with a strong female Asian lead. So all these things have just made it such a wonderful project to work on for me.
How did the project come your way, Christina?
Well, as I said, Warner Brothers is a beloved property at Warner Brothers, and they've been wanting to make it for quite some time. And so they approached me about doing a reboot of it. And it was, to be honest, a little bit daunting, but also, as I said, very, very exciting because I thought there was so much potential to tell a story, especially right now, you know, that could be uplifting, that could inspire people. And I really wanted there to be a strong female Asian lead on TV, someone who could be a role model for our next generation of kids. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that the commitment from the start by you, by Greg Berlanti, the other key executive producer you worked with, and Kara Sector, her associate, but also all the people at Warner Brothers, saying, we are going to make sure that this program has Asian Americans in front of them behind the camera?
Yes, it was important to everybody from the get-go because, you know, obviously the original show featured David Carradine, who's not Asian. and so it was important in this iteration that we did tell a story where the lead character was Asian or Asian American. And from there, I wanted to tell not just the story of one person, but to really show an accurate portrayal of Asian Americans through her family and through her friends. So I had a lot of support from Berlanti, from the studio, from very, very early days. They were 100% behind the idea, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm curious whether Parasite or the new film, Minari, that just got nominated for Oscars and just won a Screen Actors Guild Award, by the way, for a supporting actress, whether any, those two, which are both family-oriented films, whether they played a role also in how you develop Kung Fu.
Well, Kung Fu was developed probably simultaneously as those other projects. So, you know, we've been developing this for quite a while. So I would say not directly, but it is wonderful to see other Asian projects that feature families and really accurate kind of different portrayals of families, not stereotypical portrayals. So I'm excited about those projects. I think Kung Fu is different, but also will show a slice of life for the Shen family that I'm really excited for people, you know, to see and for them to meet these characters.
Now, this version is very contemporary, takes place modern-day San Francisco. You have a female lead, but someone who, like the original version played by David Carradine, decides to come to the Orient, in this case China, and learn a different way of being, which was one of the key things about Kung Fu, was that it introduced people for the first time who saw it to this new way of being, this new way of living, this new way of approaching life that had never been done before on American television. How do you adapt that, which was so one of the most beloved parts of Kung Fu, how do you adapt that to A, the character, and B, the series?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the key on our show is that the story is told through the eyes of Nikki Shen, who is an Asian American, a Chinese American young woman who was born in San Francisco, was really more American in many ways than Chinese, even though she grew up, you know, in Chinatown, hearing the language, learning the language. She was very much American. So, you know, we're seeing the show through her eyes and ears. And what essentially happens is she is on a cultural tour in China and has what amounts to a breakdown, which leads her to this monastery. So she's seeing this monastery through the fresh eyes of an American. And what she's struck by is just the pure beauty of seeing these strong, powerful women in a place where they're practicing Kung Fu, something that she also is new to her, something that she had not really experienced. And just falling in love with it and having this curiosity. She's an outsider in many ways, even though she looks completely Asian. She doesn't fully speak the language. She doesn't understand the language of the monks. So it's all about learning this new aspect of her own culture that she wasn't aware of.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with Christina Kim. She is the executive producer, showrunner, and the opening episode writer of the new version of Kung Fu. It comes to CW this Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on your local CW-affiliated station. And Christina joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour, first half of a terrific Tawabi televised episode coming your way this Friday afternoon, or this Monday afternoon, I should say. Time to have it with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for Christina, Well, pick up that phone and get your voice going, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. On our next episode, Friday at this very hour, we'll kick it off with the co-executive producer of the brand-new miniseries on Nat Geographic, Secrets of the Whales, co-executive produced by none other than James Cameron of Titanic and Avatar fame. Shannon Malone de Benecides is her name. You'll meet her as our opening guest. By the way, it's going to premiere on Earth Day, April 22nd. Also, we'll have the president of MeToo, the Latino organization that's put together a lot of digital content over the last decade or so. And now they've got their most unique project going. It's called Latino Music. It's a new music network for smart TV sets and smart devices. Stephen Brooks, the head of MeToo, will be with us. That's all Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Explain a little bit more about the family dynamic of Kung Fu, which was not in the original version, the original series, but you're putting it in here, and I'm curious how the family dynamic fits in with the storyline.
Yes, I was really excited to write a show. Obviously, Olivia Liang plays our lead, Nikki Shen, but her family is very much a part of her life and behind the decisions that she's made in her life. So it was important for me to draw out really, you know, three-dimensional characters. This is a multi-generational show, which I'm really excited about. We're going to get to know her parents. We're going to get to know her siblings, her friends. And I'm just excited to show a family, you know, in all its colors, good and bad. Really, they're relatable. They're dealing with a lot of problems that you know, we're all dealing with. And showing this Asian American family as a well-rounded family.
And at the heart of this is the person that plays the heroine, played by Olivia Liang, who is somebody I think a lot of people don't know. Tell us about her and how you found her and how she got the role.
Yeah, Olivia Liang is a powerhouse. We are so lucky to have her. She's an incredible talent. I think some people would know her from Legacies on the CW. But honestly, we had a literal worldwide search to find the right Nikki Shen. And I knew the person who would need to play her would have to be a combination of a relatable woman in her 20s going through, you know, all the drama that you go through in your 20s, which is your love life, figuring out, you know, who you want to be, what your job's going to be, your career, your independence from your family, all of that, but also had this other side where she could hold her own physically and mentally against her opponents, who could do the kung fu and do the actual action that is required for the show. So we saw, you know, hundreds of auditions, and Olivia just stood out from the get-go. I saw her, and immediately I said, that's Nikki Shen.
Mm-hmm. Did she have to do a lot of kung fu training the way Carradine did in the original?
Olivia is working very, very hard. She has a dance background. She doesn't have a martial arts background, but she has a dance background, and it's come in really handy. But we have an incredible stunts team up in Vancouver, I would say one of the best, and she is always pushing to do more, and sometimes I have to tell her to slow down, but she is incredible, and she's doing so many of her own stunts. She's a real powerhouse.
And incidentally, FYI, David Carradine also had a dance background. In fact, it was dance background that really encouraged the producers of Kung Fu, which we started as a made-for-TV movie of the week on ABC, to pick him for that role. How does the character grow in the course of the series? Because that was also a big thing about Kung Fu, the original version, was that you saw David Carradine's character as Kwai Chang King grow as he was going through his different adventures, going through the West, going through different aspects of society.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Nikki goes through a lot of transformations in the show. Even in the pilot, you know, we get a little glimpse of who she was when she first left the States and went to China, you know, in college, and then what that experience living in a monastery for 3 years did for her. But when she comes home to San Francisco, as confident as she was in the monastery, she realizes she's got a lot to deal with. She's got to deal with her family, you know, the broken relationship, and also what she wants to do with her life. And what she's discovering is that she has skills now where she can help people. And it's about her embracing those skills, seeing that she's not a superhero, but she does have skills that other people don't. And it's all about her realizing that she has something special, and she can use those skills to help people all over her community, not just in Chinatown, but all over San Francisco. And she can also use those skills to heal her family. So it's, there's a lot of personal growth. There's a lot of growth in terms of the kind of person that she wants to be. And, of course, you know, along with that, there's moments of doubt and leaning on her family to try to figure out the kind of person she'll be. So we see a ton of character growth. You'll see it in the pilot, but over the course of the series, it's been really exciting to develop her character and to have her bouncing off of the people in her family. And she's got this amazing kind of fun love triangle that we also have set up. To see her grow in all aspects of her life is really fun.
Mm-hmm. I also got a sense watching the clips, too, that the character also is someone who is trying to empower and be involved from the get-go in a situation and not waiting for someone else to be involved. And that can be a very empowering message for others.
Yes. I mean, and I think that's Nikki's innate sense of right and wrong, her quest for justice. And when she comes home in the pilot, you know, she finds her family in a difficult situation. So, of course, it's her family, so she jumps right in. But what she'll soon realize is that she's doing that for other people, too, and she's sticking her neck out. And that there's power in that, for speaking up when you see an injustice, when you see something is not right. And people will start to hear about her, and people will lean on her for those skills. And it's you know, a great responsibility, but I think that she comes to really embrace it over the course of the series.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that made the original Kung Fu series stand out was the innovative use of both storytelling technique and cinematography and film editing to advance the story. Practices like shooting in the sunlight, double exposure, triple exposure sequences, slow motion, stop action, second by second scenes with the action sequences. And also what Jerry Thorpe, the original producer director, brilliant man by the way, did called Rack Focus, where he had two characters in the same scene. One is farther from the screen, the camera than the other, and the focus goes on one person, and then the same shot without editing goes to the other person. And I'm curious, as you were producing the show, the episodes, does your show take on the bit of being a laboratory for, let's say, new storytelling technique, similar to what was done in the original?
Absolutely. I really love the look of our show, and it was something that was very intentional from the beginning. I think, you know, first of all, I have a very talented team of cinematographers and directors that we've been working with who actually, you know, produce the beautiful images on screen. But there are a lot of conversations about how the show could be a bit different. I think that we're straddling two different worlds. Obviously, we have the world of China and the monastery. We have the world of San Francisco and being back in the States and, you know, modern young person's world. And we wanted to show that through subtle storytelling techniques, through the way that we shot things when Nikki's at home. And if, initially, you know, she's a little bit at sea, and we wanted to show that through the camera work. When she's fighting, there's you know, a confidence to her, and we wanted to also show that through the way that we shot these fight sequences. And just another little thing on the fight sequences is that, yes, we have incredible kung fu. It's so exciting to be a part of. But it's just not—it's not just a fight for fight's sake. There's a lot of emotion behind these fights. We're really trying to see it through our character's eyes, through Nikki's eyes, that she's fighting for justice. She's fighting for a purpose, and it's not, you know, just a fight for fight's sake. So I hope, and I do think that that comes across in the camera work and in the direction.
The new version of Kung Fu, which is called a reimagining, not a reboot, not a retread, et cetera, it premieres this Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, on your local CW-affiliated station like WPX Channel 11 here in NYC. We're speaking with Christina Kim. She is the executive producer. She's the showrunner. She is also the writer of the first episode and the co-writer of the second. She's live with us this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised from Los Angeles. Time to have with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., New York, where it's 65 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment or remaining minutes with Christina, give a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. But anyway, coming up our next half hour, aside from our guest from America's Most Wanted, a classic trivia question of the week. We'll give you the answer to the current question we've had over the last 2 weeks. We have a brand new question for you with three prizes in play, so stay tuned. You could be our next winner, but you got to pay attention, so give a listen near the top of the hour. Christina, talk a little bit about your own experience in television, because you've had a pretty fun journey yourself.
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate enough, my first job in TV was as a staff writer on the show Lost, and I was on that show for 3 seasons, so, you know, it was, from there, I kind of moved to the procedural world, and so I have, you know, hundreds of hours of procedural TV behind my behind me, and it was really fun in Kung Fu that I can use the skills from all the shows that I've worked on to come up with a show that has a serialized element that has really interesting characters that we can dive into, but that also has from time to time, not every episode, but more of a procedural case where Nikki is helping people. So it's really been an amazing thing to kind of draw on all my different writing experiences throughout my career, all the TV shows that I've worked on, and have it kind of come together in this way, and in a really personal way, because it's for me, very special to be writing Asian American characters. It's something that you know, I got to do here and there a little bit, but never, you know, with all main characters, and that's very, very, I'm very honored to do that.
Mm-hmm. What's it been like also working with a number of powerhouse executive producers, starting with Greg Berlanti, who seems to be like the Aaron Spelling of our day? He's almost like Mr. CW, because almost all the shows on that network are under his tutelage with Warner Brothers and his associate Sarah Schechter. It's like he and Mark Pedowitz ought to own the network.
It's been an incredible experience. I worked on Blindspot for the past 5 seasons, which was also produced by Greg Berlanti and his whole team and Sarah Schechter. So it's really, it felt like an extension of that. They're like family. They have been so supportive from the beginning. And I was just excited that they thought of me and wanted me to work on this project. And it's been really a dream collaboration. At every point, at every turn, they've been supportive of my decisions creatively. And it's just nice to know that they have my back. And they saw the same show that I wanted to make, you know, which I know can sometimes be rare, but I was very lucky in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Also, you worked with Martin Guerrero, who you worked with on Blindspot, his series.
Yes, and it's been wonderful to continue that relationship. Martin's been an incredible supporter since day one, since I started working on his show. So to be able to work with him and develop this show and go through all of this together has been also just an amazing experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Recently, CBS for The Equalizer, the new version of that series, and Queen Latifah and her production company were able to work at least briefly with Richard Lindheim, the co-creator of the series with Michael Sloan back in the 80s. Richard passed away, who also was a major executive of Universal Television, passed away before the premiere on CBS, and we're happy to say that the show has done well, and on Sunday nights it's been renewed for a second season. But I'm curious, because I understand that you may have been able to talk to Ed Spielman, who was the creator of the original Kung Fu. Is that the case? And what has he had to say about what you're doing?
Yes, I got the most beautiful email from Ed Spielman when the show was first picked up to pilot, you know, wishing me luck with the new series and saying how excited he was to see it brought to life again, you know, and I wasn't expecting that at all. So it was a wonderful shot in the arm. We exchanged a couple emails after that, but it was great to have his support, and I hope that he watches it on Wednesday night, and I hope that he likes it. but yes, it was wonderful just to have that email exchange with him.
Mm-hmm. One of the most memorable episodes of the original Kung Fu series was an episode called An Eye for an Eye, which dealt with the whole topic of revenge. And at the time, this episode, and I want to give credit to the people who did it, the writer John Ferrier Jr. and the director Jerry Thorpe, who won an Emmy Award for it, and Jack Wolf, who did the cinematography. The whole idea of the episode was basically to make a declaration. Nobody has a right to revenge. And I'm wondering if there's any episodes that take a similar kind of a stand, that similar kind, because at the time, you know, for a network and for a production company, ABC and Warner Brothers, to definitely do an episode of a show, which was just starting, to basically say nobody has a right to revenge, period. I'm curious whether you have an episode up your sleeve which has a similar kind of declaration dealing with a social issue.
We do. We actually, well, as you'll see in the pilot, there's something that happens to Nikki. She loses her beloved mentor, her Shifu, and she's filled with, you know, anger, sadness, and rage. And there is a sense of wanting revenge and vengeance. And that's something that is a through line through the series. And through her moments that she's, these visitations with her dead Shifu, she's working through all that. And yes, revenge is ultimately not the answer for Nikki, even though at times she feels it should be. So I'm glad you brought that up. It is definitely a theme for Nikki throughout the series that she deals with. And also as she helps people in the community when there's injustices in the community, revenge is not the answer. She's using her spirituality and really leaning into that to find other ways, other answers to different problems.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from other Asian American producers, writers, directors in television who are really like rooting you on and hoping that this show makes it because of what it could provide for the Asian American production community as a whole?
Yes, I have. And it's amazing to have the support from the Asian American community. I've heard from so many people who are rooting for the show, really excited for me, but really hoping that the show finds an audience, and I'm excited too. Like I of course hope the show does well, and I hope it finds its audience. But I really am hoping that this is one of many, many shows like this to come, that we're opening the doors for other Asian American shows, for a wider audience for us. So it's been wonderful to feel the support from so many people.
Mm-hmm. And one final thing, Christina, if you get a second season, is there a topic or something you want to explore, how your main character grows or what's happening? For example, the Asian American crime situation that's going on in New York and other places around the country, where we're seeing, that for some reason, we're seeing this incredible spree of crimes against Asian Americans.
Yeah, we actually touched on that already in the show, and it was something that we thought was very important to address, even before these horrific crimes recently. It's just part of being Asian American. It's not a new thing, unfortunately. So we do touch on it in this first season, and it is, as far as the second season goes, we are developing ideas for the second season. I think there are so many different avenues for our character to go, but certainly at the heart of it, this is a show about an Asian American family, about the Asian American experience, and finding relatable stories for everyone to grasp, I think, is the key. So it's certainly one of the areas we're talking about.
The new edition of Kung Fu, the journey for that series, begins this Wednesday night, 8 p.m. East Pacific time on the CW. Check your locus where CW is on your broadcast station, your area, like WPX here in New York. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.cwtv.com. It's www.cwtv.com. Kung Fu, Wednesday, 8 p.m. East Pacific time, produced by Warner Brothers. Christina Kam, thank you so much for coming on. All the very best to you, Olivia, everybody, cast and crew, and making the show go, hopefully, Wednesday night's beginning of, like the original, a great long run, and a run that really impacts people in a very, very profound way.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, Christina. All the greatest. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Christina Kam, executive producer and showrunner of Kung Fu, beginning Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Pacific time on the CW, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow will be televised, coming your way. Your first award from the fine folks at audible.com. The great writer and editorial person, Walter Isaacson, has a brand new audiobook out called The Code Breaker. And it is about a very unusual group of women who may hold the key to curing us of some of the great ills, the great medical ills of society, and much more. And you can get that right now through your trial run, a one-month run with Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from at any given time, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Verbal, etc. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of the service, great health and wellness information, and wonderful customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And don't forget, if you're an Amazon Prime member already, great news for you. Two audiobooks for your trial of one, including a book from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio productions and podcasts, great off-Broadway, Broadway, and regional theater, and the best one-woman and one-man performances around. So how about making today the day that you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you love can hear the world? It makes a great gift any time of the year. For all the details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Classic trivia question coming away in the next half hour. And first, from America's Most Wanted, whose latest edition is tonight on Fox, we will have showrunner John Farrakhan live from L.A. after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. It's the best audible, the best radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, BTR brings you Real Food with Chef Thao, a different kind of food radio. Real Food with Chef Thao, Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on a Monday afternoon, day after Easter Sunday and the end of Passover 2021. Simon Knapp, I'm with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. 65 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our next guest, make that call. It's 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In 1988, a very unusual program was put together initially for the Fox television station, including WNYW here in New York, KTV in Los Angeles, and others around the country. It's America's Most Wanted. It was part documentary, part unscripted program, part interactive program, and part true crime story with recreations of actual crimes, the perpetrators who did them, who are now on the run. The show was a tremendous success first on a many syndicated level and then later on Fox. And over the course of its decades run, hosted by John Walsh, mostly on Fox, the last couple of years on Lifetime, America's Most Wanted brought more than 1,000 fugitives to justice. It also was able to recover many, many missing children, and it saved thousands of lives. Recently, America's Most Wanted came back on Fox Monday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time, hosted by former ABC News anchor and correspondent Elizabeth Vargas. And joining us live to talk about how well AMW New Version is doing, here is the showrunner of the program, live from Los Angeles, John Farrakhan. John, thank you for coming on.
Hey there, how are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. Let's find out, first of all, how is AMW doing so far in its run on Fox?
It's doing great, honestly. You know, the number one reason that this show was created, as you just did such a nice job setting us up, created back in 1988, ran for 26 seasons. The main reason for the show is to catch fugitives who are on the run, people who are wanted for murder, wanted for fraud, all kinds of law breaking out there. And the show caught 1,186 fugitives in its first run from 88 to 2013, I believe, was the final year. And we just caught another one. So that we're doing great. We just made the catch counter go up to 1,187, which is fantastic. We've had great engagement on social media. We've had nice ratings. So we're all really happy with this reboot. And if you haven't seen it yet, we're pouring tons of technology into the program. We, you know, when the show went off the air 13 years ago, rewind all the way back to even 1988 when it first debuted, there's so much more technology. There's so much more ability for the audience to interact with the show. Everybody has an HD camera and an internet-connected device in their pocket at all times. They can capture photos or identify locations of people they've seen on the program. Graphically, we have the ability to create these 3D life-size avatars of our fugitives, and to really give the audience clues of what they should be looking for. So the show has been a great success. Episode 4 airs tonight. So we really hope you'll join and watch.
What's it been like for you and for Elizabeth Vargas, who's now the host, to come over from ABC News to do this, and also for everyone involved to bring back a program that was extremely innovative and still is in many respects is, because nobody's ever done when Michael Lindley created this show back in 1988 with Stephen Chow of the Fox television stations. Nobody had ever done a program that, A, would be taped close to airtime as a true crime program, B, combined documentary work with filmmaking, really guerrilla filmmaking that recreated these crimes, and then also to, on the spur of the moment, you know, be like a news operation, and if you caught one of these folks, get over there to the scene of the, you know, to the scene of the capture, and try to get as much, you know, as you could.
There's no doubt this show was iconic from the get-go, in the way they produced it, certainly. And it was groundbreaking. You're right. There was nothing else like it. And now, you know, there have been several iterations that John Walsh has done on cable, and there are similar shows out there. But this is the first, and this is the original. And, you know, I feel like I've been blessed since the moment I first started working on this a year and a half ago. You know, we started doing developments and thinking about all the technology we can put into it and how to update the show, who should the host be. We did a pilot. You know, Elizabeth and I both worked at ABC News, so we had an existing relationship. She's the perfect person for this. You know, she is hard-hitting journalist who wants to roll up her sleeves and ask all the tough questions and uncover all the facts and details of the case, which ultimately will help lead the audience. You know, it's like putting out a trail of breadcrumbs, right? Will help lead the audience, hopefully, to catching these fugitives. But Elizabeth also has a huge heart and an amazing ability to connect with victims of crimes. And tell those stories, because ultimately, again, that's why we're here, the victims. We want to get justice for these victims. So it's been wonderful. It's been humbling to work on such a iconic program. And it's been a ton of fun to figure out how to take this thing that so many Americans have a pretty, you know, warm, fuzzy feeling about. I remember back in 1990 when every Saturday night I used to watch the show, as I've been working on the show and telling people about it for the last year and a half, folks have had nothing but positive things to say. And so having that sort of burden hanging over me has been a little bit stressful, because you don't want to screw it up, but, you know, infusing a bunch of technology into it and modernizing the show in a way that you couldn't really have, you couldn't have done it in 1990 or in 2000 or in 2010. So it's been an awesome journey, and you're right. It's been historic and iconic, and nothing ever, there was nothing like it when it first came out. And, you know, I would argue that this new reboot that we just put back on the air, there's nothing like this out there at all. As I mentioned earlier, there are several fugitive hunting shows out there, but the way we're incorporating technology in the studio with Elizabeth and our team of experts, coupled with those recreations that are paramount to what AMW has always been, there's nothing like that. And I think that gives the audience the tools they need.
How do you use all the technology tools you have, both in the studio but also in the recreations? You know, whether it's augmented reality, whether it's micro cams, whether it's mini cams, whether it's cams you place that are so like, you know, that you see on like the top of your computer, let's say, or your top of your laptop.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, we did produce this show during a pandemic, and every show producer is, you know, had challenges there. We did have to adapt. We weren't able to, you know, send big camera crews into every home of every, you know, police official and witness and victim. That wasn't possible, given, health and safety, and guidelines. So we did have to adapt and do, you know, some interviews via live streams. We absolutely did. By and large, I would say the recreations were pretty authentically, you know, produced the way they always were, in a pretty Hollywood kind of way, with, you know, our casting and costumes and all that kind of stuff. And we tried to elevate them and make them as high quality as we possibly could. And I think we accomplished that. Really, the technology comes within both the interactivity with the audience and then the bells and whistles in studio. We've got an augmented reality map tracker where we're able to pinpoint known locations of the fugitives and then potential what one of our experts, Paul Holes, calls anchor points, you know, locations where these fugitives have known relatives or have been in the past. Our avatars, which I've mentioned, which we've used, the same software that's creating the most incredible video games, lifelike video games right now. We used and added age progression technology to have these blinking, breathing, life-size avatars that stand next to our host, and we can point out, well, look, he always wears a mustache, so be on the lookout for that. He has a tattoo on his right forearm that is this. Take a look at that. So really distinguishing features that people can keep an eye out for, you know, on a 3D representation of what these fugitives are. It's way more valuable than a still photograph or a full screen graphic. It's the technology has been pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with John Farrakhan. He is the showrunner of the new version of America's Most Wanted. It is now on Monday nights, including tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on your local Fox station, hosted by Elizabeth Vargas. And John is with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, as we are with you on this Monday of April 2021. Happy you're aboard. Simon Appel with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., namely Nueva York, where it is now 65 degrees at the top of the hour. If a question or comment for John, don't be shy. Use that phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple0419. Don't forget, on the next episode, Friday at this hour, we'll kick it off with the co-executive producer of the new National Geographic miniseries, Secrets of the Whales. It premieres on April 22nd, Earth Day 2021. We'll have Shannon Malone DeBenefitis. And then from the brand new channel, Latino Music, from V2, the president of V2, Stephen Brooks. All coming your way Friday, 3 to Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. How do you determine, John, what cases you cover and how you cover them?
That's a great question. We spent a ton of time last fall connecting with the U.S. Marshals Service, connecting with the FBI. We talked to Naval Investigative Service, and we talked to the Secret Service, and plenty of local police departments all over the country, and asked for cases that were high priority and really important to them. And then, we put them through our own filters and looked at what would present well on television, obviously, by using the medium of TV. I think, we understood that we had to choose the cases that would play out the best there. And we wanted to hit all parts of the country from, the biggest inner cities to the suburbs to rural areas. We wanted a wide cross-section of different types of crimes, everything from a parental kidnapping to a elaborate fraud scheme where millions of dollars were stolen from unsuspecting victims to murder, to drug running. And we wanted some fresh, brand new cases, but we also wanted some older cold cases in the event that we could, help crack one of those that investigators had been working on for a really long time. So we spent a lot of time trying to figure out, which cases, and early January landed on the ones we were going to cover, and then kind of broke it down by episode, so you get a little of this and a little of that in each show.
Mm-hmm. That first night, by the way, of America's Most Wanted, one of the things that was everybody was like worried about was, number one, would it get the approval of the leading federal authorities, the FBI, the Secret Service, and so on. And the second thing was, would people watch, and if they watched, how fast would they respond with that phone number, 1-800-CRIME-88? As it turned out, the show, which was actually done like a minute or two before it had to go on satellite to the Fox television-owned station, the Fox O&O's, it was like 10, 15 minutes after the show went off the air, which was, I think, 7 o'clock local time here in New York and elsewhere, depending on your market, the calls really came in, and it was a few days later that, boom, David James Roberts, who was the first fugitive to be caught, was caught. Did lightning strike twice for you with this version?
Honestly, yeah, I think in that scenario you just mapped out, he was that tip that came in the first night, he was arrested 4 days later, and we had a story that was a great caught-on-camera crime. It's in our first episode, it was an assault of a woman who had taken her van and driven it into a car wash, you know, like the automated kind of car wash that you see connected to gas stations all over America. And a man had walked into that car wash while it was running and opened the door and assaulted this woman and dragged her out of the vehicle and actually bit her in that whole process and then drove away with her minivan. We had that all on camera and featured that in our first episode. And a tip came in that evening, and within 3 days, police in Colorado had him had that suspect in custody and off the street. So, yeah, in that sense, lightning essentially did strike twice. Yeah.
What's it been like to get the FBI and the other organizations back into the fold and endorse your version the same way that they endorsed the original with John Walsh?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, the intellectual property of America's Most Wanted, everybody knows about it. Every law enforcement officer knows about it and knows what it did and knows how powerful it was. So getting them on board was not very difficult. You know, we did have a very long development process. This show took several years to get on TV just for a whole host of reasons. And so I think the only issue is there was just a little bit of skepticism, like, is it really going to go in the air? Is it going to go now? Is it going to go now? Because they were anxious. Like, everybody was telling us from the Bureau and the U.S. Marshal Service specifically, like, this show needs to go back on TV. Like, this show helped us so many times find someone, get a perpetrator off the streets who could be causing more damage, more risk to human life, more crime. So everybody kind of in the law enforcement community was excited to have it come back and knew about it and the power that it had. So it wasn't hard at all to get folks back on the bandwagon and to play ball with us.
You mentioned that you had worked with Elizabeth before at ABC. What's it been like for her to adapt to this kind of a format where you really have a lot more things to do than just report news? Or to be on, because you're balancing various stories, you're dealing with the viewer response, and you're also dealing with, in different ways, trying to flesh out a particular case.
Yep. It's been a pretty easy, I think, transfer of like, you know, I come from live news too. I spent 12 years as a producer and executive producer at four local TV stations around the country. So Elizabeth came from local news as well. Then she and I both landed at ABC. She was at, you know, World News Tonight in 2020, and I was at Good Morning America. So those kind of like studio-based television skills that are kind of journalistic-based in their fact sort of based storytelling. She and I covered a lot of crime. You know, I've spent most of my career in a control room, and she spent most of hers in a television studio. So there were a lot of skills for both of us that transferred very nicely. But, you know, this show is certainly different than news and a little bit different in how we tell stories. And we both learned from it, I think. We both have grown a bit. I think for her, like, the combination of her skills as a reporter and, you know, and her basis in, like, everything has to be, like, factual, but also her empathy and her big heart and her connection to the victim, it's made it a very easy transition for her, and she's just been fabulous to work with at every turn, and she's elevated the show, made it better, made it smarter, and I think helped provide the viewers with more clues at every turn. So it's been a natural transition for both of us, and I'm just so thrilled to have gone on this journey with her in on this new reboot.
We're talking about the reboot of America's Most Wanted, and it's back on Fox where it started. It's on tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox station, hosted by Elizabeth Vargas. We have John Farrakhan, the showrunner of the program, with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. Another internet radio exclusive today. On tomorrow will be televised. Tom, I'm with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. Don't forget, by the way, tonight, NCAA Men's Basketball Final, Gonzaga versus Baylor, should be a dandy. That is tonight on CBS, so we want to make sure you knew about that, just in case you wonder. And congratulations, by the way, to Stanford for a wonderful game with Arizona, the NCAA Women's Final Four and final game that was on ESPN last night. Incidentally, I really want to do a quick shout-out to all the commentators. They did a fantastic job on the both Men and Women's Final Four, Jim Nance, Bill Rafferty, and Grant Hill on CBS. Kevin Kugler, great calls on Westwood One with the NCAA Radio Network with a Final Four game, including the Gonzaga UCLA game last night. I think it was one of the best calls, by the way, of his career. And Ryan Ruccio and Rebecca Lobo with the Final Four and the championship game last night on ESPN. If, of course, you're coming for John, our remaining moments with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name, and stay tuned. New classic trivia question coming your way. Free prizes in store for you if you are the winner. So stay tuned for that. John, what are some of the cases coming up tonight and in future episodes?
So tonight, I was just going to say, don't watch basketball tonight. Watch America's Most Wanted on your Fox station at 9/8 Central. There's my plug. You know, we have a pretty juicy story about a man who was in the military, and he was a bodybuilder, and he's got all these elaborate tattoos, which you'll see tonight, that are very recognizable. And we sort of built them into our avatar to help everybody keep an eye out for this killer. He murdered a woman he was dating a few years ago, and she was this beautiful young mother and had so much to live for, had two kids, and he's been on the run for 5 years, and authorities would really love your help tracking him down. There's another husband and wife team of con artists, and they were operating out in Hawaii for years, and they ran this slick, smooth operation where they would make you think that they're going to help you out of some financial trouble, and then they end up like taking your life savings and your home. And they had sick, you know, lots of sick and older folks evicted because of foreclosure, booted out of their homes that they had had, and they've been on the run for around a decade. So we'd love your help catching them. Those are two of the cases tonight that we really focus on the show.
Between episodes, between Monday nights, how do you encourage people who have information about these cases to call in, be involved, and so forth? What do you do? And I'm also curious whether AMW is also carried on Tubi, which is the Fox multi-channel bundle that's on smart TV sets and smart devices.
You can watch the episodes on both Tubi and on Hulu, and of course on your you know, your cable system's on-demand feature, or if you record it on the DVR. But yes, Hulu, yes, Tubi. We have two ways that you can interact with us if you have a tip to send in. One is amwtips.com, amwtips.com, and the other one is 1-833-3-AMW-TIPS. So the hotline and the website are both up and live 24 hours a day. You can send us your tips in via the web portal on the website, or pick up the phone and dial us in the traditional way. We've worked with the U.S. Marshal and the FBI and other local law enforcement to man that phone center on Monday nights and actually talk to you live. And then on, I think you mentioned, between Monday nights, we have a whole system for taking tips in via voicemail throughout the week. So we have robust, and you can call us or interact with us online 24/7.
John, what's it been like for you and Elizabeth and everybody involved to not only bring what really was one of the great groundbreaking, you know, shattering, really ground-shattering concepts of all time and make it a reality for so many years, but also to modernize it, to bring it up to speed, to bring new technology, new TV techniques into the process of trying to bring these fugitives to justice.
It's been really fun, you know. I think I mentioned that this is the development on this has taken a long time, and some of that is because you know, we're doing things that have never been done, like this idea of like having an avatar in studio. You know, there's a lot of technology involved, and you really need to see the show to understand it, because I can't really do it justice on the radio here. But like, as the cameras, you know, move around the studio and zoom in and focus on different things, you know, the avatar is like it was really there. So we can zoom in on the tattoos and that kind of thing. So just developing all of that technology, I've learned a ton. It's been extremely fun. I've always had the, you know, this is an iconic show, this is an iconic brand kind of mantra running through my head throughout it. So, you know, I've always wanted to uphold what this show was, all the, you know, the earth-shattering things that it did, all that John Walsh accomplished. I mean, John's ferociousness at catching people and giving the audience clues and bringing justice to victims and children. I mean, you know, going all the way back to what he experienced with his son, Adam. I think the original AMW found like 44 children and brought them to, you know, and reunited them with their families. That's unbelievable. So that's always been playing in the back of my head, but it's been very fun and just great to update something that's so important and so many people hold in high regard and have positive feelings about.
Mm-hmm. The latest episode of America's Most Wanted, hosted by Elizabeth Vargas, happens tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox station. Check your local for where Fox is available in your area. And don't forget, you can also catch the replay of America's Most Wanted, both on Hulu and on Tubi, Fox's multi-channel bundle available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Same with Hulu. For more details about the program online, go to Fox.com. And for more details about the individual cases that America's Most Wanted covers, and if you have any information whatsoever about any of the cases that are presented, go to amwtips.com. It's amwtips.com, and use that phone number that you see if you watch the program tonight. As John Walsh always used to say, and he still does, remember, you can make a difference. And I'll add on the difference. So do it, please, and support this program. It is definitely worth your time, and it's also worth staying on television for the long run. John, thank you so much for being on. Congratulations to you and everybody, Elizabeth, and as well, for making this show back on television where it belongs, on Fox. And hopefully the new version is going to have as great a long run as the original did. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome, John. Take care. All the greatest.
All right, ciao.
John Farrakhan, the showrunner of America's Most Wanted, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question segment. Unfortunately, the question we had with you the last 2 weeks, nobody got it. So unfortunately, nobody got the prizes that we've been offering. We're going to bring those prizes back for our next question in a moment. But first, let's give the answer to that question we posed the last 2 weeks. Who was Super Dave Osborne's announcer sidekick? The answer, Mike Walden. Yes, the guy with the colorful suits, jackets, that he would be on with Super Dave, announcing the stunts and then interviewing him after in whatever state he was in. That's the person. Mike Walden was Super Dave Osborne's announcer sidekick first as part of the comedy sketch series Bizarre on Showtime, and then the follow-up, Super Dave's own variety show, which ran 4 or 5 seasons on Showtime. By the way, you can see episodes of both currently on YouTube. Now let's give you our current classic trivia question. If you're first with the Greg Slayer, you will win Enough About Me, The Unexpected Power of Selflessness. It's the new book by MSNBC and NBC News anchor Richard Wee, who was on our program a week ago. It's a great, great book. Also, the soundtrack of Star Wars, Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, by the Oscar-winning composer himself, John Williams, and Wycliffe Jean, Carnival Volume 2, Memoirs of an Immigrant. Here's the question. Name the actors playing Law & Order's original pair of policemen way back in 1990. Remember the initial season of Law & Order? Name the actors playing the initial pair of policemen on Law & Order. And by the way, the person, one lasted one season, the other lasted the original first 4 seasons, then came back on Law & Order Criminal Intent, as well as his own Law & Order original made-for-TV movie. Once again, the question, name the actors playing Law & Order's original pair of policemen during that first season of that 20-year run of that show. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to post your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win. Enough about me by Richard Lee. Star Wars, Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Wycliffe Jones, Carnival, Volume 2. If we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So get involved. We want a winner, and you could be it. But you got to enter to win and be in. So do so, and all the very best. One more thing before we leave you today. On Friday, our show to know was episodes of The Defenders, the classic 1960s television series with E.G. Marshall and Robert Reed now playing on YouTube. We mentioned one of the episodes, The Tarnished Cross, which featured one of the first early performances by Martin Sheen. A quick follow-up on that show to know. This weekend, YouTube started running episodes of another series by the producers of Defenders called Coronet Blue, a series starring Frank Converse, wonderful actor, later on NYPD for 2 years on ABC, a show about somebody who lost some of his memory thanks to a situation, and all he knows about the situation is that somebody or some organization is trying to get him, and all he knows is the code name Coronet Blue. The series originally was made in the late 1960s, DBS. It was shelved for a year, despite good advanced reviews, and it came on during the summer of the following year. I think it was 1969, and guess what? It was a hit. But by that time, Converse had moved on to NYPD, and everybody else was gone, so they couldn't make new episodes, and that's the way it went. Great opening title theme by Lenny Welsh. Coronet Blue, from the producers of Defenders, in color, now running on YouTube. Again, I want to thank our great guests this hour, Christina Kim from Kung Fu and John Farrakhan Mergers of Wonder for being with us, and all of you for tuning in. We are back on Friday, so be sure to join us at 3:30 Pacific for our next Tomorrow Be Televised episodes. We'll have co-executive producer of the new Nat Geo series, Secret of the Whales, Shannon Malone DeBenedictis, and from the new Music Network on smart TV sets and smart devices, the Tito Music from Me Too Present, Stephen Brooks. Should be a terrific hour, plus we'll have more too. So be sure to join us, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised this Friday afternoon. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast. It's available 24/7 at iTunes, Apple TV, Amazon Music, Verbal, the iRadio Podcast Network, and other podcast sites. And remember, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our program today and our guests? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it is headed? Just email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook and LinkedIn. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. However you communicate, we communicate back. Why? Because, as always, what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate at BTR is Mandolin. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. The co-founders of this enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and a one-month trial, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Verbal, Amazon Music, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. We are licking this pandemic, and we want to now and forever in New York City and all over the place. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.